866. But why don't write it down when you can tap that right into your phone right now? Call that number, 877-500-5266. Make it happen for you, for your family, for your friends, for your whole community. You know that you need this kind of information. This has just happened. Nobody else is going to tell you about the fact that if we don't get down to City Hall on Wednesday, we could lose the Washington Park Reservoir. I'm not kidding. We got a phone call this morning. That's why we call it news, because we didn't know it was going to happen. We can't promo that. It just came in because of people just like you calling 877-500-5266. You can go online. That's KBOO.FM, where you can become a member right now. Push that button. Have a look at all the amazing, terrific programming that is coming up today, tomorrow, and every day. 365 days a year. That's a big number. But an even bigger and better number is 877-500-5266. Call that number right now. Keep this kind of programming on the air. Locus Focus is coming up. Wow, what an amazing program. Barbara Bernstein, the best.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Katie O'Brien's, located at 2809 Northeast Sandy, a neighborhood sports bar serving breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Lunch was provided by Dots Cafe, located at 2521 Southeast Clinton Street, serving food and drinks to the Southeast Clinton neighborhood since 1991, including vegan and gluten-free options as well as brunch. Dinner was provided by Dove Vivi, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason, serving cornmeal crust pizza for dine-in and takeout.
KBOO members, what's your vision for your community radio station? How do you see the mission of KBOO? The KBOO Foundation has a programming charter and strategic plan, and now it's time for a mission and vision statement to help direct our policy and inspire the community. From now through May 15th, we're inviting member input on our website. Visit kboo.fm/survey2015 to take our survey. You can also read up on our programming charter and other guidelines and find frequently asked questions at the same page, kboo.fm/survey2015. Or you can pick up a copy of the survey at the station. And on Saturday, May 30th, we'll be hosting a mission and vision retreat for members. If you'd like to attend, get in touch with Monica Beamer and RSVP. The email address is monica@kboo.org. Thank you for being an active member of KBOO.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Wilkin & Company, PC, Certified Public Accountants, helping businesses, individuals, and nonprofit organizations make financial decisions based on their personal values since 1987. Wilkin & Company is located at 2435 Southwest 5th Avenue in Portland. Information at 503-225-1359 or wilkincpas.com.
Good morning and welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Taste is often dismissed as the most primitive of senses, yet it's really the most complex and subtle. This morning we'll learn how taste originated, starting with flavor's primitive stirrings 500 million years ago, and many millions of years later with the taming of fire, how tools making flavor became the first true catalyst of cultural awakening. My guest is John McQuaid, author of Tasty, The Art and Science of What We Eat. John, welcome to Locus Focus.
Nice to be here.
Well, you say in your book, basically, you make a case for taste being the most important of all the senses, or at least the most complicated, and also the most overlooked. So what is your reasoning for that?
Throughout history, people have, from scientists to philosophers, have praised vision and hearing and touch as the more sublime of the senses, because they link us to great art and they allow us to navigate through the world. Whereas taste and flavor are associated with food and eating, which is considered kind of a base sensation, something you have to do to stay alive, something that tends toward gluttony in some people. So taste has always been a bit mistrusted by the leading intellectual lights of society, no matter what historical period you're talking about.
So why do you think that taste is as important as you seem to find it out that it was in your book?
For that same reason, it is what directs us to, returns us to eating certain foods, and helps us to stay alive. So it's obviously, essential for our survival. But it also gets us into a lot of trouble in the modern world in terms of eating things that are not good for us. But it's also kind of such an essential part of life that we almost don't notice how important it is. We kind of go through saying, well, what am I going to have for lunch? I'll have this sandwich at this place I like. It's a very mundane kind of thing. But when you think about it, you think, what went into this sandwich? There's hundreds, thousands of years of cultural tradition behind it, the craft of cooking that brought it to us. And there's also the experience of eating, which is very complicated and engages all parts of our brain and our being on a lot of different levels. So all these things are kind of so routine, yet so marvelous and underappreciated that I think we need to look at them a little more closely.
Well, in your book, you describe the first taste. So what was the first taste?
At some point in the mists of prehistory, way, way back when life was first evolving into from one-celled organisms to more complicated creatures that could eat other creatures, at some point, one of these creatures bit into another and tasted it. And in my book, there's a fossil that a scientist discovered that is not literally the first time this happened, but it's the oldest fossil evidence of a bite taking place and the taste underneath the bite taking place. It shows kind of how ancient this sense is and what a primal force it is in life and evolution. It's kind of a crux of evolution, the fact that to eat something, you need to be able to taste it. That enables a creature to tell whether it's good or bad or, poisonous or nutritious. And also, this kind of drives life. You have to get to your next meal. You have to determine whether it's good or bad. It's tied into all these body processes of gratification and drives that get us moving through the day. So it's kind of driven the history of life for millions of years.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking this morning with John McQuaid, who's author of Tasty, The Art and Science of What We Eat. And we're going to be talking this morning about how taste, our our sense of taste actually had a great deal to do with shaping the rest of our functions, our the shape of our brain, the complexity of our brain. But at this moment, we're going to be moving to another subject briefly and be talking with Elizabeth and Pear about shaping the nervous system and the brain and the tastes of Kebu, and how we can make Kebu a more vital and thriving and far-reaching organism. So we're going to talk about that for a few minutes, and then we'll get back and talk more with John. So I think Elizabeth and Pear, I'm a little bit early on this, I understand.
Yes.
But are you there? And there's a terrible buzz.
Yes.
Okay.
We are here.
Okay, and it's maybe we should put this off until we can get rid of that buzz.
No, it's okay. We're good.
Okay. Okay, Liz, I think you need to get on Pear's mic.
Well, we are talking about why you should be KBOO members, so come on over to the phone, 877-500-5266. Do it now. Be part of the KBOO family. We have people waiting to hear from you, and we are. You can come on down and see us. Come on down and see us at 20 Southeast 8th. Be part of the KBOO family.
And that family includes all of you who are listening to us right now. You are the community in community radio. We can't bring these kinds of programs to you without your financial support. It really is just that simple. So now is the time to show your support for Locus Focus. Barbara, how long have you been doing this show?
Well, I started this show in one of its iterations in 1991.
There you go. A really, really long time.
Yes.
I mean, that, you know, forget about you know, valuing Barbara's dedication and superior reporting all of these years. What matters is that for your, you know, as far as you're concerned, that she's been bringing you really interesting information and things that you can't hear anywhere else for a really long time. We know that you value that because you're listening right now. 877-500-5266. We'd like to thank Shayla, who is a renewing member from Forest Grove. Way to go, Shayla. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks to all of you who have renewed or become new members during this drive. Now's the time for the rest of you who are listening to us, the other 9 out of 10 who are not yet supporting members of our station. What are you waiting for? Pick up the phone. 877-500-5266. And if you become a member at the $60 level, you can receive a copy of the book, The Art and Science of What We Eat.
Tasty. It's called Tasty.
Tasty. The Art and Science of What We Eat. Thanks, Barbara. And, you know, this is a great opportunity to further ingest what KBOO is offering you this morning. And, you know, it's always interesting to listen to a program on the air, but you never get everything. And so the book is a great opportunity to reiterate what you're hearing now and to go even further in depth. And that's what we do here at KBOO. We go in depth. And that's really, really important. We know that that matters to you.
We need you to go in depth right now.
We need you to go in depth.
In your bank account.
That's right.
And so we can go deeply into your bank account once a month and take about $5 or $7.50 or $10, whatever you would like to share with us. And we just transfer that money from your bank account to our bank account. It's painless. It's very easy to set up. You just have to call 877-500-5266. And one of our friendly volunteers will talk you through the steps of becoming a sustaining member of KBOO and giving us a little bit of your money every month. And I understand that you can get a cappuccino, probably not a cappuccino, but one of those bigger drinks for $5 a month. So if you just give up one coffee drink a month, and we'll be learning in a couple moments about the bitter taste receptors that make you like that coffee drink. So turn on another receptor. Turn on the community radio receptor.
KBOO tastes good.
The KBOO receptor. And call right now at 877-500-5266. Become a member, and we will be talking to you a little bit more. So thanks, Pear. Thanks, Elizabeth. I hope that we get that bus fixed by the next time we're coming back on. And we're going to return now to talking with John McQuaid. My guest this morning is John McQuaid, who's author of Tasty, The Art and Science of What We Eat. And I want to talk a little bit, you mentioned this whole thing about developing a taste for eating, for whatever goes into your body. And it was a very early primitive microorganism that was took the first bite into another organism. But how did, from that first bite, how did we develop the complexity of taste and the ways that it connects with our brain and our social development?
Well, it was a very long process. Those first bites took place perhaps 500 million years ago, which is when you first had complicated organisms evolving. Since then, at each point, seemingly, in the course of evolution, brains are getting bigger and mouths are getting bigger and more complicated anatomically. And at each point, you know, taste gets a little more complicated too, because there's more competition in the environment. You got other creatures that are trying to eat you or eat the same thing you're eating. And so this process goes on and on. And at various points, certain things pop out and certain things recede. So in humans, for example, you know, we have very big brains. And so the human sense of taste is somewhat similar to that of chimpanzees, you know, in terms of the things we can sense. But our experience is much different because our evolutionary history over the last few million years is much different. We have bigger brains, so we make more complicated associations. Our heads are shaped differently. And so this means that there's a shorter passage from the back of your mouth to your nose, which, and so the sense of smell, which is important in flavor, is enhanced in humans, in food. So our experience of food and the subtleties of flavors are more complicated than our closest relatives. And so you can see at various points, humans kind of went off in our own direction in flavor from animals. That makes our experience, you know, really rich and complicated and often kind of confusing and contradictory.
Well, you talk in the book about how our sense of taste actually had a lot of influence on the shape of our brains and our development of our brains, as well as our other kind of social development. So how do you describe that?
Yeah, well, that's a really fascinating question, because the emergence of cooking takes place at the same time that modern humans are developing. You're talking a million years ago, 2 million years ago, and this is a very crucial and not really well understood period of human evolution, and yet, you know, absolutely essential to what we are today. And cooking at this point, humans learn to tame fire. They learn how to use fire to cook things. It's an obvious progression. Cooking things makes them taste better than when they're raw, almost universally. So as soon as people discover how to use fire, almost certainly they're cooking things. And this changes the human diet. At the same time, the human body is changing. The brain is changing. Humans are getting more upright. Brains are getting larger. And the food and the enjoyment of food and the acquisition and preparation of food are all changing very rapidly and all kind of driving one another in a virtuous circle. So, for example, if you want to cook some meat, meat enters the human diet at some point during this phase. If you want to get some meat, you can't just grab it like a nut or a berry. You have to go out and hunt an animal and kill it and then chop it up and prepare the meat, cook it, serve it. Much more complicated. You have to plan it out in advance, work with other human beings. So you can see that that requires more brain power. You have to be able to run after it. That requires a lithe body. Your gut has to be able to digest it. You know, human guts are shaped differently from those of other close relatives, chimps and apes. So so food and flavor are kind of bound up in at the center of this process. And so in my book, I make the argument that it's flavor that makes us human, because it's there really at the birth of the human essence. You know, culture and other things kind of spring out of prepared meals, recipes that are handed down, etc. So kind of this virtuous circle forms around the sense of taste and flavor.
Well, another thing you mentioned in the book is how long it would take to chew uncooked meat, and that if humans had just turned into carnivores but eaten uncooked meat, they would have spent all their working, all their waking hours either chewing or hunting. So how did reducing the amount of chewing time kind of enhance the rest of humans' lives?
Yeah, exactly. That's a fascinating question that's still debated among scientists. Basically, yeah, you do have to chew meat, raw meat, a lot to be able to digest it. Human beings have small guts, small jaws compared to most other animals. So, you know, our physiology, our brain, you know, the brain also requires this huge amount of energy because we have large brains. They consume lots of energy to keep going. So the human body and brain arrangement makes no sense on a certain level unless you take certain things into account. And one of those is cooked food. Cooking food kind of externalizes the digestion process, if you will. So you can chew meat more easily, or cook a potato or something. You can chew it and digest it much more easily and efficiently. So the human gut could also shrink, and that made our bodies more efficient. It also forced us to go and hunt more, you know, because you need to keep eating this stuff because you don't have a huge gut, you can't hold a lot. So, and that also makes us smarter. So you can see how these changes reinforce each other.
Well, another thing that seems to come out with the change, I'm thinking about all the kind of food fads that have been around probably for the last couple hundred years. And a couple that are interesting are the raw food fad, and then people who don't believe in eating meat, people who are not meat eaters and who believe that humans aren't supposed to eat meat. But it seems like some of your the research that you've done would belie both of those points.
One of the most interesting things about humans is people are omnivorous, so they can eat almost any combination of things they want and still get by. And humans have lived in every part of the world for the last 100,000 years and tried almost every diet and succeeded every diet. So I don't want to say, one diet is good and another diet is bad. I mean, that's true in some cases, obviously. But it is true that, yeah, humans evolved eating meat. Humans like variety, and meat, was essential in various ways to human evolution. But people have lived without meat also. That's an interesting question. Obviously, today we have a much different food environment that we live in, vastly different than anyone has lived in, 100 years ago, and certainly 5,000 or 100,000 years ago. So your dietary choices today are going to be influenced by what's available today. For the most part, the meats we have available today are nothing like the meats that humans evolved eating 50,000 or 100,000 years ago. So it's kind of a complex question when you look at, what is the right diet to eat today versus, can you replicate what people were eating way back when, the paleo diet or whatever.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking with John McQuaid, who's author of Tasty, The Art and Science of What We Eat. And we're going to talk with Elizabeth and Pear for a few more minutes. When we get back with John, we'll be talking a little bit about two specific tastes, bitter and sweet, and how sweet can be the downfall of us all. But right now, I want to open up the mics to Elizabeth and to Liz and Pear. And
actually, it's just me, Barb. You and me.
It's you and me. Okay.
We're here together.
And you sound so nice and clear. I guess our engineer Tommy has been very busy
he's still working on the buzz. But that's not what listeners are interested in. And frankly, it's not what we're interested in. What we're interested in is telling you how important your support is of KBOO at this time during our membership drive. And the best way to show your support is to get on the phone at 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and either become a member if you have not been a member before, or if your membership has lapsed, or renew your membership, or increase your membership. You know, more and more people are becoming sustaining members, which means that you give a little bit every month, maybe an hour's wage every month, and that helps to sustain the station. And it's a really convenient thing for you too, because it all happens automatically in a safe, secure manner. Our volunteers on the phone are waiting to take your call, and they can walk you through that entire process.
And what's that number?
That number again is 877-500-5266. And if you become a member at the $60 level, you can pick up a copy of John McQuaid's book, Tasty, The Art and Science of What We Eat, which just goes further and further into some of the things that you're just touching on in this interview right now. It's a great opportunity to learn more about how our brains process taste and what that means for us biologically and chemically and socially. And I remember Michael Pollan saying something about that the advent of cooked food was basically the beginnings of civilization, which is kind of a provocative statement, but it made me think. And I'm wondering if maybe that isn't actually true.
And what's interesting is, and one of the things I learned from reading Tasty is that humans have been cooking food for a really long time,
yeah,
like for over half a million years.
Yeah.
And you know, we think of civilization as starting maybe 10, 12,000 years ago, but there was civilization of predecessors to Homo sapiens. And this is what's amazing about this book, and what we won't get into as much in this conversation with John today as I'd like to, about all the ramifications of the cultural and the social and the political ramifications of what we eat and how we eat it. And also a lot of the biology. As someone who never took any biology when I was in school, I've been loving to read these books that are like presenting biology in a way for people who don't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good way to learn about it. And you can learn that yourself right now if you call 877-500-5266 and become a member of KBOO, or you can join online by going to kboo.fm. That's kboo.fm. And there's a donate jar in the upper right-hand corner of the webpage. Just click on that, and that'll walk you through the steps.
Absolutely. You know, we have a goal of $300 for this show, and we know we can make that goal, but we need your help to do it, and now is the time. 877-500-5266. Become a member at the $60 level and pick up a copy of John McQuaid's book, or become a member at the $75 level, pick up a copy of John McQuaid's book, and KBOO's partnership with Friends of Trees will ensure that a tree is planted in your honor. So you will be helping to green the urban canopy, you'll get a copy of this amazing book, and you'll support KBOO. It's a triple win-win-win. What's not to like? Pick up the phone right now, 877-500-5266. Or again, go online, safe and secure, at kboo.fm. Show the support that we know that you feel for this station. We know that you care about KBOO because you're listening to us right now. It's as simple as that. But we do need you to take one more step and up your support from listening to financial and other support too. You could become a contributing partner at KBOO and come down here and learn how radio is made. That's always a great thing too. We welcome that. But first step, pick up the phone, 877-500-5266. Thanks to everybody who's become a member or renewed their membership, and please pick up that phone now.
Thanks a lot, Liz, and we'll be talking to you in a few minutes. And again, the number to call is 877-500-5266. You can also join online by going to kboo.fm and clicking on the tip jar. We're talking this morning with John McQuaid, who's author of Tasty, The Art and Science of What We Eat. John, in the last few minutes that we have here, I wanted to start by talking about bitter, which was one of the most fascinating parts of your book for me. And I was rereading the section this morning as I was drinking my cup of coffee. So what's the connection between our bitter receptors and that cup of coffee that I enjoy so much?
One feature of food, which is unusual for humans, is that we like things that are bitter, like coffee or broccoli or almost every food contains some bitter element, which is ubiquitous in the plant kingdom. So anything that has vegetables tends to be a little bit bitter, sometimes a lot bitter. And this is weird because bitterness is a bad taste. It's objectively bad. It's an aversive reaction that, again, is evolutionarily very ancient. So why do humans like it? I was wrestling with that question throughout the research and writing of this book. And there's no easy answer to that from a biological standpoint. I mean, humans have a great sensitivity to bitterness. It varies greatly between individuals because there are 23 separate genes that program different receptors, which are proteins on the tongue that detect bitter substances. And each of these genes, you know, in each person is different. And some people are very sensitive to bitter things. Some people are relatively insensitive. Some people are sensitive to some things and insensitive to other things. And there's a lot of, you know, huge, like on the order of 1,000 or 10,000 degrees of magnitude. And so this is one of the things that makes each person's sense of taste different from everybody else's. So I found that just fascinating, and that's a legacy of our past as omnivores, as creatures who evolved eating lots of different things, who colonized different parts of the world. We fumbled into different types of food. Some of them tasted bad. Some of them we had to eat them, even though they tasted bad, and so we adapted to like them. And so this is one of the things that tuned all these different genes this way and that to make us all, each of us, unique in our bitterness, whether we like it or not.
Well, you talk about there being people who are tasters and people who are non-tasters, and then it's not just humans, and it's not just certain, it's not just Homo sapiens, because we discovered that Neanderthals had the same divisions, and also chimpanzees and other apes do. So what does that mean, being a taster or a non-taster?
Yeah, there's a specific one of these bitter genes that comes in several different variations. And some people, it's a non-taster gene, which means you are relatively insensitive to a lot of different bitter tastes. One particular substance, you can't taste it at all. And then people who have different variations on the genes, either they can detect the substance, or they're extremely sensitive to it, and it tastes, you know, just awful. And so I had myself tested, in my family also. You can take a simple, it was like a paper you can taste, or a genetic test you can take. And we did this in my family, and myself and my wife and my kids were all non-tasters. So it was interesting, you know, I tasted this paper and it didn't taste like anything, but some people taste it and it's the worst thing they ever had in their lives. If you're a non-taster, that also is a good indicator that you're going to be relatively insensitive to other tastes too, and so you might prefer spicier foods, hotter foods, more sour, bitter things than someone who is a taster, because you're looking to make up for your deficit in this area by, you know, bombarding your senses.
So does the fact that I really like coffee and I like dark beer and I like cranberry juice, would that indicate that I'm probably a non-taster?
Probably yes. No way to tell, because again, there are so many different elements to this. There are all the different tastes have their own genes and receptors, and the sense of smell comes into it, and your life experience comes into it. But yeah, there's a good chance you're a non-taster.
No, what's curious?
If you're a taster, you're much more sensitive. So, like people who are wine connoisseurs may be more likely to be tasters because they can pick out the individual molecular signatures of things more easily than other people.
I want to get into the other kind of the opposite of bitter and talk about sweet, which is something that's very attractive probably to most people, and also is almost possibly becoming the downfall of the human race in the 21st century. So how do the receptors for sweetness compare to those of bitterness?
It's a totally different thing. I mean, sweetness is a signature of sugar. So there's really only, you know, two, three genes for sweetness. And this means basically there's not a whole lot of variation in people's sensitivity to it, kind of the brute, you know, can you detect this indicator? And pretty much everybody likes it. which is good, because you need to, if you're an animal living in the wild, sugar is this ready source of nutrition and energy. You know, everybody knows it provides this energy burst. It's also relatively rare in nature to find a sugar, although it's, you know, sugars are part of all the processes of life, but really it's, you find it in sugarcane, you find it in honey and in fruit and, you know, dates and other things, but that's pretty much it. So you can see why the relative scarcity of this, you know, in 100,000 years ago, you want to be really sensitive to it, and it provokes this reaction that makes you want to keep eating it. However, today, you know, we're surrounded by sugars in everything we eat, so it's kind of backfired on us.
Well, yesterday I was picking out a blueberry plant that I planted, and I was talking to the farmer deciding between two different varieties, and he's describing one, Duke blueberries, which are very sweet and large and kind of soft and, in my mind, kind of mushy and too sweet. And the other ones that I wind up getting, Chandler's, are a little bit tartar and a little bit firmer. And I'm wondering if, again, my predilection towards spicy foods and bitter things like coffee would also direct me towards a blueberry that's not a totally sweet blueberry.
Yeah, that's possible. I mean, the other element of cuisine is people like variety and they like a little bit of provocation and contradiction in food. And particularly if you're more prone to like bitter things, you're a non-taster, you're going to seek out those kind of those provocative, interesting flavors.
Well, in the last few moments, I want to talk a little bit about the conundrum that we're in this time of processed food and this over-availability of sugar, as you were describing. And how has, like, what I find interesting is people who gravitate towards junk food that's very high in fats and sugar and salt, and this is what they want to eat. And you mentioned in your book, it's kind of almost an addictive thing. For me, because I weaned myself off of this stuff many, many years ago, I will look at food commercials on television and feel revulsion. Either that or it looks to me like I'm looking at plastic food. How have our taste buds changed so that so many people will look at this stuff that Michael Pollan calls food-like substances and actually find this appealing? And what are some of the dangers about our survival as a race, as the human race, if we gravitate too much for these kinds of foods?
Yeah, that's really kind of the basic question of our time in a lot of ways. Well, I mean, we learn to like things, just as you learned to dislike something by not eating it and kind of training yourself away from it. You know, when you're a kid in particular, we're bombarded with images on TV of cartoon characters and messages saying, you know, you should eat this. And then we try it and we say, Mom, I got to have more of this. Mom, Dad, please buy me that candy bar. At times I bought my kid the candy bar. What are you going to do? And so, you know, if you grow up in that environment, of course you're going to like this stuff because it's tasty in a kind of crude way. It hits all your pleasure centers in your brain, you know, sugar, fat in particular, salt in also, all the layers of spice that are added to things to kind of make things interesting. All those things, you know, you get used to it and you need to have it to keep those gratifications going. And if everybody else is eating, of course, that has an effect too. So you really have to take the initiative if you're, whether you're an individual working on your own diet or a parent or, you know, supervising anybody's diet, you need to make a conscious choice to say, well, what's good for me here? How do I kind of direct myself away from all these commercial messages and bright packaging and over-determined tastes and eat what is better for me? And also, you know, the flavors in more natural foods are better. You know, they're Obviously, if you put a little effort into preparing your own food, it's going to taste better than something you buy off the shelf.
Well, John, I want to thank you very much for joining us, and really enjoyed your book, and I hope that some of our listeners will also get a chance to read it. So thanks a lot.
Thanks. I enjoyed it.
And we've been talking this morning with John McCade, who's author of Tasty, the Art and Science of What We Eat. And now we're going to talk, I'm not sure whether Pear or Liz is out there. Okay, so we're going to talk a bit more about what's here at KBOO for you to for your palate and for your enjoyment.
Every person I know with Crohn's has a list of foods that can't
be all different. Liz, hello.
Hey there. So we're here to ask you one more time to support Locus Focus. We think it's really important, and this is the last time in this hour that we're going to be coming to you to ask you for your financial support. And you can do that by calling 877-500-5266 or going online at kboo.fm.
And if you want a copy of this book, Tasty, the Art and Science of What We Eat, it is yours for a $60 minimum pledge. That's really easy. My gosh, just $5 a month would do it. You know, that's, I don't know. I think this book probably does better, more for your taste buds than a cup of sweet, sticky latte or whatever they put in those grandiose cups. But anyway, 877-500-5266. That will get you in touch with one of our volunteers here. We'll take all the information, tell you all the premiums and thank you gifts we have. Or you can come on down and see us. Come on, bring some money. Come on down, chat a while, have a cup of coffee.
We're located at 8.
Southeast 8th.
Yeah. Just off of Burnside, between Burnside and Ankeny.
Well, one person talking at a time. 20 Southeast 8th.
Sorry about that.
And actually, I want to kind of interject here. I was thinking about the difference between the kind of junk food that John was just talking about that goes right for those receptors in a really direct, cheap kind of way, the same way that drugs go for those receptors, and how they kind of flatten us out. And a lot of media is the same way. Particularly the stuff that attracts your clicks, as they say, when you're online and you go click, 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 but you're not absorbing anything, you're not getting any information, you're not getting any nutrition through it. And KBOO is like real food. KBOO is like natural stuff that grows and that you prepare and you nurture and you share with your friends. And it's that kind of food for your mind and for your spirit.
Homegrown.
Yeah, and we've been doing this since 1968. And more and more, as the world gets weirder and weirder to me as I get older, and I look around and go, what is all this stuff about that doesn't have anything to do, doesn't connect with anything that's real? As the world becomes more and more virtual, I really appreciate the reality of KBOO, the basicness of KBOO, even the buzz that Liz had on her microphone when we first started. You know, there's people here that are doing this all. It's all human-made and handmade. And you can become part of this and really help this to thrive and help us to continue a world in which people matter, in which human-made things matter, and in which real things that are based in nature matter, by calling 877-500-5266. Become a member of this very vibrant, very human, very local, hyper-local, and very resilient part of Portland. I think that KBOO is one of the institutions that has helped create the Portland that we know today. I don't think Portland would be Portland without KBOO.
Doug, do you remember what Portland was like in the old days before KBOO? And there's big, big difference. Portland used to be kind of a conservative place, kind of a hokey little town.
A little backwater, yeah.
Yeah, you know, not anymore. Now it's sort of the go-to place among the hipster community.
But I think KBOO can save us from becoming too hipster.
I hope so.
And too go-to. And that's
the thing
that I feel like there's a real genuineness about what we do here at KBOO. And I know that every time I tune into the station, I'm kind of relieved. Even when I'm hearing things that I don't agree with, which is one thing that's nice about KBOO, we're just not one mindset. There's a lot of different minds here all putting together.
There's no KBOO consensus.
Right. And I just get this excitement because there's human beings doing this. So give a call right now, 877-500-5266. You really need to support us as much as we need your support. So call and become a member right now.
And life will taste better after you become a KBOO member. I guarantee it. You will savor life much more. You will know how precious it is and how delicate it is, you know. It's just it needs nurturing, and it just sort of needs to grab hold of the roots, sink the roots into the grassroots community. I am really going away with a metaphor here, so I will interrupt that with a number, 877-500-5266. Stop me before I do
okay.
it again.
Okay, and actually, I want to thank Pear and Liz very much for helping out today, and for it's nice talking with you guys, and it's really nice to share our love of KBOO. And now it's time for me to get out of here so that David Naiman can take over. So I want to let you know, today we were talking with John McCade, who's author of Tasty, The Art and Science of What We Eat, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KBOO Community Radio. If you're just tuning in, you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to it online or download the audio later this afternoon on our website, kboo.fm/locusfocus. Next week, we'll commemorate the 35th anniversary of the 1980 eruption of Mount St. Helens with Portland State University geology professor Scott Burns. My engineer is Kate Welch. I'm Barbara Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Van Morrison. Thanks for listening.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of We the People Standing Together to Protect Our Climate, Lessons from the Community Rights Movement. Thursday, May 14th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel in the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Paul Cienfuegos is presenting this original speech and will lead a community conversation about the community rights movement and how civic engagement can lead to reclaiming the structures of law. Again, that's Paul Cienfuegos with We the People Standing Together to Protect Our Climate, Thursday, May 14th at 7 p.m. at the Elliott Chapel at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And yes, you do have it tuned to KBOO Portland. It is half a minute. It's a half a minute past 11 a.m. And coming up is Health Watch with host Dr. David Naiman. Today he interviews Dr. David Perlmutter about his book, Brainmaker, The Power of Gut Microbes to Heal and Protect Your Brain for Life. And you'll want to stay tuned at 11:30. We speak with James Russell, author of Social Insecurity, 401Ks, and the Retirement Crisis, the story of a massive and international retirement robbery. So keep your dial right where it is.